Good morning, Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer, and New York State Senator Thomas Duane joins me now to talk about a report his office has issued on potential crowding in Hell's Kitchen schools. Actually, it's worse than crowding. In 10 years, the report predicts pure overflow. We'll also talk to Senator Duane about all the fun in Albany this past term, especially the gay marriage bill. He's a big mover behind that. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
So tell me, I've read your report. Kind of a nightmare scenario by 2019. What's the situation going to be in the schools in Chelsea and Clinton?
Well, we're just not going to have enough seats for children to go to school. We put together this report by looking at how many apartment units are either already under construction or in the pipeline, and we figured out how many seats are actually available right now. And what we discovered is that there'll be over 1,000 children without seats by 2019.
In fact, the report says 1,026 elementary age students. And I was wondering how you could possibly be so specific.
Well, in order for a developer to get approval to build, they have to go through an environmental impact statement and file that with the city's Department of City Planning. And based on how many units, the size of the units, how many children we think will be living in those units, and how many people and children the developers and the City Planning Commission agree will be living in those units, that's how we came up with the number.
Now, the environmental impact statements, from what I understand there, if a developer has an inkling of building, or maybe more than an inkling, they will issue them. But, you know, with the recent economy, a lot of the buildings that where you count the numbers are stalled projects. So couldn't it be that you're overestimating the number of buildings that will actually go up because people may have issued environmental impact statements in 2004 and there are just holes in the ground and nothing's going on in those sites?
Well, remember, this study is talking about what will be completed by 2019. That's 10 years out. And I am expecting, and I believe, and of course I hope, that the economy will have recovered. And we also know that the Midtown West is one of the more underdeveloped, I guess if you were a developer, you would say that, areas in Manhattan. And we expect that these projects will go through in that period of time. Remember, the mayor, in his study of what's going to happen in New York City, is expecting that there'll be 1 million new people living in New York City. And it's certainly far from the realm of possibility, it's not far-fetched, I should say, to think that many of them will be moving to the west side of Manhattan, and people want to move into these neighborhoods. And in fact, one of the reasons they move into these neighborhoods is because the schools are very good. The two schools that are there now, PS 51 and PS 111, are pretty good schools, and they're improving. And we expect that parents are going to want to send their children to public schools.
This happens all the time. There's development in a neighborhood, and it seems like the last thing on the agenda of what to account for is building enough spaces in the schools. And I was wondering, you know, obviously you're advocating for your constituents, or, you know, who knows if you'll be there in 10 years, although the Senate, of course, often re-elects its senators, but you're advocating for the people who live or will live in the area you represent. Is it too ad hoc? Do you support some sort of formalized mechanism that if you build, you have to account for school space?
Well, I don't even think we need that, although we may have to do that. Remember, we are calling on the Department of Education and the administration to work with us in a collaborative way. There's enough time to plan for new classroom space. If they do that, then there shouldn't be a need to legislate through the land use process formally demand that there be more classroom space. Remember, I have some unfortunate experience in this. There's been a crisis in the Greenwich Village part of my district. We'd been warning about it, parents and elected officials, and what happened was the Department of Education really had to scramble, and they really used us to find more classroom space. It's a terrible problem on the east side of my district, which is the sort of lower Midtown east side part of the district, but on the Upper East Side it's been a terrible problem, and it's an enormous problem I'm having on the west side part of my district as well. So here we have an opportunity to actually deal with the problem before it becomes a crisis. And as I say, we more than are willing to work collaboratively with the Department of Education and the administration to plan for the influx of children. Remember, the Hudson Yards, which may not start to be developed immediately,
right,
the zoning for that has gone through, and we expect a tremendous amount of residential development to happen there as well. So under almost any scenario, there's going to be many more children coming in, and we should really deal with that issue right now.
I wanted to ask you about your role in the often sad and often hilarious meltdown that happened in Albany a couple months back. There were, you've been a Democrat your whole life, a couple Democrats defected, chaos in the state Senate and state assembly. During that time, were you trying to lure your former colleagues back? Were you thinking of forming a breakaway faction? What was your thought process then?
Well, let me just start off by saying a couple things. It was absolutely the worst experience I've ever had during my time in public service. It was terrible, and I know from the outside, when you looked at it, it was terrible, and we deserve every ounce of criticism that we got for it. And I want to say that on the inside, it was even worse. It was terrible. Absolutely. In fact, I have to say I'm still sort of recovering from post-Albany traumatic stress right now. I mean, it was just dreadful.
I don't know if that's going to be in the DSM-4, but maybe you have a diagnosis ready to go.
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be it's a passing condition, and time will heal it. But the Democrats won. We absolutely wanted to keep the majority. I think it was unfortunate that there were people who were switching sides. We always thought that they should come back. They were elected to be Democrats. They were elected to be part of the Democratic Conference. That said, I hope that the silver lining behind the horrible storm clouds is that there will be more equality among all senators, regardless of party affiliation. That's something that I have desperately wanted. It's what I really had experienced when I was in the New York City Council. I was shocked and dismayed when I went to the Senate, and it was not like that under the Republican leadership. And frankly, when the Democrats took over, we could have done a better job, and I pushed for that to happen, and I wish that it had happened, but now it will happen, I believe. So the equalizing the resources and really the power of individual senators and other reforms of what can happen about bringing legislation to the floor, I think will make us a better legislative body. Time will tell, but you can bet I'm going to fight to make that happen. I didn't think it would take 10 years and a number of crises to make that happen, but I'm dedicated to making sure that that happens going forward.
But I do want to ask you about reporting. At the time, on June 10th, the website of The Observer, Politiker New York, had a headline that said, Smith, that's Malcolm Smith, by a thread, Sampson moving towards leadership, Dwayne, that's you, flirting with Republicans. To be fair, I read all the stories. I don't think they really backed up that headline with anything other than some anonymous quotes. But it did get out there that perhaps you were so upset with the fact that the gay marriage bill had stalled that maybe you were flirting with Republicans. How close did you come to that?
Well, the interesting thing is there is not one piece of substantive legislation that I have ever gotten passed, whether it's Timothy's Law, which is parity for mental health services, which actually relates to what your earlier segment talked about, or hate crimes legislation, legislation or any civil rights legislation that went through that was not done with bipartisan support. I have always spoken with people on the other side of the aisle. There is no way that I've ever been able to get anything substantive done without making sure that there was bipartisan support. So I've always spoken to, reached out to, worked with people on the other side of the aisle. However, it is inconceivable that I would become a Republican or that I would be a member of a Republican-led conference. I am a Democrat. I have always been a Democrat. I will always be a Democrat. There's no way I'm ever not going to be a Democrat. Did I speak with everybody during that period? Of course I did. I mean, there might have been a couple of people, not among my colleagues, but in the world, who I didn't call back. But I don't have to call everybody back. And so there was we're not hearing from him. Well, just you weren't hearing from me. But trust me, I was chatting with a lot of different people in government and, of course, outside of government during that time as well. Is the gay marriage issue very, very important to me? You bet it is. You bet it is. I absolutely want to get it passed, and I never stop talking to my colleagues about that. But on a whole range of other issues, I've also always talked to my colleagues. You know, for instance, I'm the chair of the Health Committee, and every senator has hospitals and primary health care clinics, rural health, urban health, suburban health facilities in their districts. I speak with all of them because we're in a very dynamic time, shall we say, in
yes.
the reform of the healthcare system. So, you know, I'm in constant communication with all of my members, but I am a Democrat.
I got that. And I'm going to ask you a question where I'm going to guess the answer is going to be I have no idea where the story came from, but do you think it was motivated by people who wanted to pretend that you were closer to defecting than you were? Or perhaps the fact that the story got out there underlined how upset you were that the gay marriage bill had stalled, made a point to Malcolm Smith, we need to get this gay marriage bill going.
You know, I mean, in all candor, of course, there were Republicans that reached out to me. And, of course, I did talk with them because I talked to everybody. But it wasn't just the gay marriage issue that was stalled.
Yeah.
It was everything was stalled. Everything was stalled. And I know that the word, you know, get back to work. I must tell you that we were all working very hard, but we just were unable to come onto the floor and vote on legislation because we were in a horrible gridlock. But the work did go on. But again, I have to apologize to everybody in the state of New York for the horrendous situation that we put ourselves in, and really pledge to never let that happen again, and to make a better situation where we will all work together, we'll all be empowered, we'll work in a bipartisan manner, and we're going to get the work done that needs to be done in New York State because we're in tough times and we have a big challenge and we have to meet it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about one other issue, and this is your sponsorship and support of a bill that affected people living with AIDS and HIV and what percentage of their income needed to be spent on housing. And you rose in passionate defense of this bill, so passionate, in fact, that a video of your floor speech, a 22-minute video, which is featured on your website, went viral to an extent. And a lot of people were saying this was one of the more amazing political speeches I ever heard. We have a couple excerpts of that speech, but could you just tell us what the bill was about that you were talking about that we're going to hear in a second?
Well, right now, everyone in New York State who gets some kind of public benefit to help them pay their rent has their rent capped at 30% of their income so that they are not impoverished. That's everyone. But people living with AIDS who are living in private housing, who, because of a policy that was put in by the former, by the Pataki administration, makes it so that this group of people are left with only $330 a month to live on. That is for everything, toiletries, phone calls, transportation. And so what this policy has done, and again, it's the only class of people in New York State to get a public benefit to help pay their rent, is that they are left with virtually no money to live on. And these are very, very sick people, and these are very, very poor people. So that's what this issue is about, and that's why I felt so strongly I was not willing to wait another moment to try to help these people to really have some decent quality of life. And what had happened was, and again, because there was tension between the two conferences, earlier in the day, several of very good bills that I had passed, including disclosure of nurse staff ratios in hospitals. I mean, substantive bills had passed, but for some reason, the Republicans started to block legislation, including mine, and I had a couple of very good bills, consumer protection bills, that were defeated 29-28. And that one vote defeat was no accident because they were good bills. For some reason, a message was being sent, and I wasn't going to put up with it with this bill.
And I want to stop you because I really want to play so the listeners understand the tone. Let's just play 20 seconds of that 20-minute speech, and here you are at 3 a.m., by the way, July 17th on the New York Senate floor.
Funny. Kill Dwayne's bill. Yeah, I'm nice. I got a sense of humor. But I'm not here so you like me. I'm here to save my life, and I'm here to save the lives of other people because they don't have anyone sitting here.
And many, many statements like that. One more, just again, for a sense of the tone and how outraged and impassioned you were.
In Queens, where I grew up, was in the paper. They wanted to cite a small house for people living with AIDS. The neighbors hysterical. All those people with HIV around our children. Today that goes on.
Tom Dwayne, had you ever gotten that worked up in a Senate speech before?
You know, I have on issues that I felt passionately about, whether it's Timothy's Law or civil rights or hate crimes legislation. And this may have been the most impassioned of all because this combined a lot of things. This was housing. This was tenants. This was people not being evicted from their homes. This was poor people. This was people living with HIV and AIDS. This was people who were stigmatized. Yes. I mean, the reason I'm in Albany is to give voice to people that don't have a voice there. And I wanted to make sure that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle heard why I'm there every day, loud and clear, that I am never going to give up on fighting for things that I believe in. And as I say, that tenants, people who are at risk of losing their housing, poor people, people living with severe health problems, people living with mental illness or trying to recover from addiction. I am going to do everything in my power to make sure that we keep a safety net for people and that we don't allow their lives to be miserable, that we try to give them a decent quality of life.
When you saw it playback, were you in any way shocked or surprised?
Well, you know, I mean, it really is the reason that I get up every day. You know, I'm happy. I'm proud that people send me to Albany to do this work. I hope they'll continue to do that. But the reason that I do this work is because I do feel so passionately about it. It really is my life's work.
We should say that you are gay and you have HIV?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I ran openly with people knowing. People know just about everything about me, I think, and I think it's important that they do because I want to bring a lot of voices to the table in Albany.
The bill passed with only one objection, almost unanimously. Was this the rare case where a floor speech really changed people's minds? I hear that almost never happens.
I do think that a floor speech changes minds. I believe that it made a difference in Timothy's Law. I think it made a difference in the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act. I do think that floor speeches can change minds, and that's how a legislative body is supposed to function. Our debates are supposed to be passionate. Our debates are supposed to actually open minds and change minds. And I'm going to continue to make speeches like that. And I have other colleagues that do similar things. And I hope that more will do that. And that we'll all continue to really debate openly and honestly and forcefully and passionately and emotionally and on the merits legislation that really matters to New Yorkers.
But the bill is stalled in the Assembly, is that right?
Well, I'm hoping that they will pass it when they come back. The governor's going to call us back in sometime this fall, I believe, and right now the plan is in late September. So I'm hoping that this bill will come to the floor of the Assembly, and you can bet that then we'll have to fight to make sure the governor signs it into law, because I also want to say, while on the face of it, it seems like it might be an expensive bill, actually, there's a terrific study done out of Johns Hopkins that shows that this will save money, because people will not be evicted from their homes, and people stay healthier when they stay in their homes. Also, there's an expense to defend people from being evicted from their homes. So for a whole host of reasons, it's been shown that legislation will actually end up saving the city of New York and the state of New York money, and provide a better quality of life for people who really are suffering.
Senator Tom Duane represents the 29th District in Manhattan. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Good to talk with you.